Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bay that scare ya. Machado, Orbado, or no.
Good morning, everyone. On Wednesday, August 17th, Adam and Scott coming at you again with another Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Hey, Scott, I am in a crappy mood.
Crappy mood? Come on. Dansby Swanson's coming up.
Whatever.
Whatever. First overall pick last year. Do you realize, Adam, that Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman are both going to be in the majors? It's the earliest a first and second overall pick may have reached the majors since Alex Rodriguez and I'm forgetting the other one, but whoever was drafted right after Alex Rodriguez since they came up.
That's I really would deal. Like you to find out because I want to know who was drafted after Alex Rodriguez.
I am looking at it right now and the correct answer is Darren Dreyfurt.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that went well for half of them.
Yeah, so which half is going to be Alex Rodriguez and which half is going to be Darren Dreyfurt?
Wow. Well, I want it to be Swanson, of course, because he plays for my team. But Alex Bregman has had the more productive minor league career. I'm very surprised Swanson is coming up.
Right. I mean, that I looked at his numbers. They were nothing special.
No, they weren't at all. I thought there's no reason to rush him. Next year would probably be the time we saw Dansby Swanson, but I imagine they have a better assessment of that than I do. And I do think, like, a prospect like Dansby Swanson, who is rates high in terms of makeup and the intangibles are just completely off the charts, like that kind of prospect is someone who's biding his time in the minors from the get-go. And sometimes that shows in the numbers. Bryce Harper didn't dominate any level of the minors except maybe like low class A. And he's been a fantasy mainstay since getting called up. That doesn't mean I think Swanson is going to be. I don't think, given the depth at shortstop, like this is a drop everything and pick him up kind of promotion.
Right, I mean, there's no way you drop Brad Miller for Dansby Swanson.
No. Even before the two home runs yesterday,
right.
I wouldn't advise doing that.
Didi Gregorius.
Just behind Didi Gregorius
is
where I have Dansby Swanson, because I think Gregorius, Zach Cozart, they're reliable enough that if you have them as starters, there's no need to replace them. So that brings Swanson to 20th in my rankings. Just one spot ahead of Jung Ho Kang. Kind of a similar situation for both. They have the upside to move rapidly up those rankings, but you shouldn't necessarily expect it. I do think if you're picking up a shortstop just to fill a bench spot, then Swanson should be a higher priority than Gregorius or Cozart or any of those other
less upside-y.
Yeah. Less upside-y types.
Right, exactly. Well, okay, great. So you're in a good mood about Dansby Swanson. We're going to talk about a few other call-ups, Chad Pinder, Mitch Haniger, and some Yoan Moncada news. Also, the struggling Noah Syndergaard and Dallas Keuchel, the amazing Irvin Santana. That could be, that's kind of a magician's name. The amazing Irvin Santana, it just works.
Well, if you put amazing in front of it.
No, but it works I feel like it works with Irvin Santana.
The amazing Dansby Swanson. Is that not
Dansby Swanson could be a magician's name, too. He is a very unique
name. Dansby Swanson is just a killer name, period.
You say the amazing Dallas Keuchel. Sorry, Scott. What were you saying?
Yeah, I'm just saying Dansby Swanson could do anything he wants with that name.
Yeah.
Killer.
Tremendous name. But it wouldn't work with, like, Dallas Keuchel's name. It wouldn't work with Andrew McCutchen's name, but he's turning things around, hopefully. We had a lot of multi-homer games yesterday. We'll talk about that. We got some bullpen news for you and some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. But here's why I am in a bad mood, Scott.
Yes.
Big week in the podcast categories league. Huge week. I was right in the thick of it. This is such a hyper-competitive league. I was right in the thick of the playoff mix, and I had a 3-7 week yesterday. Really, I blame AJ Ramos. You need two closers in that league. I don't have two closers anymore. There's nobody available on waivers. Not even Fernando Salas. So, I started all my starters. I punted closers this week, punted saves. It's a quality starts league. It's a quality starts league. And at one point, I had last night, Michael Pineda, Eduardo Rodriguez, Blake Snell, and Vince Velasquez all going at the same time. Velasquez was throwing four scoreless innings. Blake Snell didn't give up a lot of earned runs. Eduardo Rodriguez was throwing a no-hitter. Michael Pineda was dominating the Blue Jays. Pineda, rain delay. Rodriguez, injury. Snell, can't get through five innings. Velasquez, terrible in the fifth and the sixth inning. Zero quality starts. And then, of course, I had Braden Shipley going as well, so that was a huge mistake I made in a couple of leagues this week. Oh, so annoying. Also, who else do I have in that league? Ryan Braun. Is this finally Ryan Braun going to go on the DL now? I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. August 17th, is this the day Braun's going on the DL? He collided with an outfield wall and he hurt his knee and his ankle. Oh, so annoying. What a frustrating fantasy night.
It was a well-framed story by you.
Thank you.
Too. I mean, all of those pitchers, yeah, it's pretty amazing that none of them came away with a quality start as well as they were throwing.
I checked,
and Braun,
I checked the score of the league at one point, and I was like, I am going to have a huge night.
Yeah.
It just fell apart very quickly.
It all came unraveled, and yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a very different takeaway from each of these situations, I feel like, in terms of, you know, who actually improved his stock, who hurt his stock ultimately. Should we just go through them one by one?
Yeah, sure. Pineda, go.
Pineda, I feel like, hasn't really budged in terms of his value because the last few starts have been better, but with the sacrifice of strikeouts, and that's the main thing he brings to the table. So I'm still not really trusting in him.
More ground balls, I noticed, in these two starts, especially yesterday. I don't think it's a trend, but he did have, remember 2 years ago when he was great? He wasn't striking a lot of guys out, but he was getting, or was it 3 years ago when he had the sub-2 ERA? He was being really efficient, going deep into games, not striking a lot of guys out. I wonder if he wants to go back to being that kind of guy.
I mean, it would, I obviously we'd take that. That would be an acceptable trade-off. It's just going to take a little more of this for a little longer to convince me.
That's Pineda. Okay, next up we have a guy that left yesterday's start with an injury, but probably someone you want to consider picking up because they're hoping he can avoid the DL. That's Eduardo Rodriguez, and he's been pitching better, and he left with a no-hitter in the, I believe, the sixth inning yesterday at Baltimore, Scott.
And he had seven strikeouts in those six innings. He is somebody who does seem like it's on the rise here. Since returning from the minors, a span of seven starts, he has a 2.52 ERA, right at a strikeout per inning. And not getting burned so much by the long ball either. So seems like this is a high upside pitcher rounding into form. Definitely somebody to look into on the waiver wire.
And somebody who was, they kept saying, tipping his pitches. That was their big concern with Eduardo Rodriguez. So maybe he fixed that. Blake Snell.
It looks like he's improving his stock. He has been better in terms of not allowing runs. But the reason he couldn't go six in this game is the same reason he hasn't been much at all lately, because way too many pitches overall, eight strikeouts compared to four walks in this start. That's less than six innings and four straight starts now. And I don't care how many guys you're striking out. If you're not going the minimum for a quality start, it's not going to amount to much in fantasy. And because walks are part of the issue for Snell, it's inflating his whip too. So it's hurting you. It's hurting his head-to-head value. It's hurting his roto value. It's making him pretty fringy, I think, despite the evident upside.
Yeah, he had this stretch, Blake Snell, in July. Three starts in a row against the Angels, at Colorado, and at Oakland. Six innings, 6 2/3. Kept the walks under control. He only gave up four runs combined in those three starts, scoreless at Colorado. And I guess it wasn't great because he wasn't pitching seven innings or anything, but it's fine. It was certainly acceptable for somebody you picked up off waivers, and he was looking like one of the best rookie pitchers. And then the last four starts, he hasn't pitched more than 5 1/3 in any of them. He's walked a ton. Let's see, he's walked 13 in 17 1/3. So yeah, no, you're spot on there on Snell. I keep starting him in the one league I own him, but I just don't really have any better options.
Maybe the closer would have been a better option. Save the whip a little.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, David Robertson and a middle reliever. Whatever. But Snell's 73%
owned. Maybe
Robertson
wouldn't help your whip. I don't know.
Yeah. Would you rather have Snell or Eduardo Rodriguez?
I would rather, at this point, Rodriguez. This is flip-flopping just with this last start. Obviously, that changes if Rodriguez winds up on the DL.
Yeah. Now, Velasquez, apparently he limped off the field when he was removed from the game. He, you know, might be running into some innings issues because he threw, over the last four seasons now, Velasquez threw 124 and two-thirds, then 64, then 88 and two-thirds last year, and now 118 this year, including five in the minors. You know, two terrible starts in a row. Both came against the Dodgers, six home runs in these two starts. Before that, he was pitching pretty well, but there were some whip issues. I don't know. You know how I feel about Velasquez. He's been frustrating for me all year. I've always wanted to trade him. I never could. And I kind of hate everybody for liking Vince Velasquez after that Padres game. That's where I'm at with Vince Velasquez.
Well, I think that's mostly fair. For a while, it was impossible to downgrade him just because he was so consistent in terms of how many runs he was allowing. And it was good enough to start him, particularly with the relief pitcher eligibility. But if that consistency is out the window now, like it appears to be with these last two starts, three home runs in each. And yeah, maybe it is the innings catching up to him. Maybe not. But the bigger point is that 10 strikeouts in this start, that was his first with more than seven since May. So he hasn't been a dominant pitcher, even for the occasional start. He's just been solid and not hurting you, so we're sticking with him.
Yeah,
now it's,
right.
It's not clear exactly who he is.
And those players annoy me. I'd rather just get rid of him. Or at this point, I'm sitting Velasquez, although he has another start scheduled for Sunday, I guess, and he is a two-star pitcher this week. So he's got another start scheduled. We'll see what happens with Vince Velasquez. We can talk about it on Monday and make our decision off of that. But would you, if Velasquez was one of the streamers on your team, would you drop him for Dansby Swanson?
It depends how much I was relying on him in a relief pitcher capacity. If it was just straight up, if he was just a straight up starting pitcher for me, I'd at least think about it. It depends also how likely I was really to get Swanson in my lineup down the line. If I had like a stud shortstop already, probably not.
Sure. All right. So from yesterday, we had Swanson being called up. We also had Steven Moya getting called up by the Tigers. Eric Ibar was traded from Atlanta to Detroit. That's why Dansby Swanson is up now. Any interest in Steven Moya, Scott?
Not really. I mean, if you're desperate for power in a roto league, you could give him a look, but it's not clear how often he's going to play. And there are guys like Brandon Moss is still widely available. Aaron Judge, I'm not sure what he's up to, but I think it's less than 70%. I think there are other power sources on waivers.
Chad Pinder, an infielder for the A's, is being called up. He is batting .258 in the minors with 14 home runs, 23 doubles, and 107 games. Nothing special here, a 735 OPS. Any interest?
No. He was an okay prospect coming into the year, but it's been an underwhelming season, and I don't have a lot of hope for him.
How about Mitch Haniger in the Diamondbacks organization? He started last night against the Mets, made his major league debut. He batted 7th. Haniger started in left field. He went 2 for 4. He doubled and he tripled. He's off to a great start. And
he had
a really good minor league season this year.
Well, particularly at AAA in the PCL,
wow,
which is a hitter-friendly league. But he kind of just took off there. .351 with 19 home runs in 64 games. So he's homering every third game with a crazy batting average, even better on-base percentage. The guy walks a lot. He used to be a pretty highly regarded prospect in the Brewers organization and had fallen off until, you know, that half season at AAA. To me, it makes him kind of the antithesis of Dansby Swanson here. You have, you know, elite pedigree from Swanson, but very little minor league production versus, you know, not much of a pedigree, but crazy numbers. And who's going to end up making the bigger impact in fantasy? It'll be an interesting litmus test here. I'm not rushing to pick up Hannigan outside of NL only leagues, but, you know, a couple more games like he just had and he'll be getting picked up probably in some of my leagues.
And you can make your Annie jokes now.
He's
Hanniger though. He's not
Hanniger instead of, yeah. Yeah. We love you, Mr. Hanniger.
Yeah, I think I am. I think I'm going to add him right now. I didn't realize how amazing his numbers were. He was
what
good
are you
at double
him?
A too. Not as
no,
good.
He wasn't that great in double A. What was
no,
the OPS?
No, he wasn't great. 869 OPS, 294, only 5 home runs in 55 games.
Maybe it was the home runs I was reacting to. I didn't remember it being that OPS is good though.
Well, it's the OBP. Yeah, it's 407 on base percentage. So
right. So what are you adding him in?
I am adding him in our 16-team OBP league, and I am going to drop Braden Shipley. Goodbye, Braden Shipley.
That
time
reasonable.
Here was worthless. You were worthless. I hated you yesterday, Braden Shipley.
Yeah, that was a pretty good matchup this week, so it seemed like it might be worth the gamble.
Yeah.
But he... All of our fears about Braden Shipley were realized in this start. Didn't even get a single strikeout in those 5+ innings.
Yeah, that was a big mistake on my part. I regret it. Yoan Moncada is dealing with an ankle injury. He re-aggravated it last night, so we don't know when we will see him, but still maybe somebody you want to stash. There's a lot of season left, people. Hopefully a lot of season left for you in fantasy. Now, here's a new segment called... Sometimes life can be tough, and I know that sometimes it's hard to keeping the faith. Do you know what that's from?
I'm not going to get your reference here.
You've seen the movie.
Keeping the Faith?
This is 80s Billy Joel cover band.
I have no idea.
You've seen Step Brothers, right?
I have seen Step Brothers, yeah.
This is Horatio Sanz, one of my favorite lines from the movie.
Ah.
He's the jerk lead singer of the 80s Billy Joel cover band. They only do 80s Joel. And he comes out and he's like, "Hey, how you guys doing tonight? Having fun or whatever?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, sometimes life can be..." The song is Keeping the Faith and he's trying so hard to work in a pun.
Yeah.
"Sometimes life can be tough. I know sometimes it's hard to keeping the faith." It's so forced.
Yeah,
but anyway,
right.
It is hard to keep the faith sometimes. In Noah Syndergaard and in Dallas Keuchel. Two of Keuchel's last three starts have been terrible. Syndergaard has been very pedestrian lately, 3.41 ERA since the All-Star break, and I think the start before the All-Star break was a struggle too. I don't remember exactly. He's not pitching deep into games. He's just given up a lot of hits lately, Noah Syndergaard. And yeah, Keuchel, you know, in between these two terrible starts, a complete game shutout against Texas and a very good stretch before it. So at what point would you consider sitting Keuchel or Syndergaard?
I mean, you have to consider it for Keuchel now. Two awful starts with, you know, sandwiched around that shutout. It's very unpredictable, annoying, all of that. But I think at least in a one-star week, you have to be just as scared of him hurting you as your hopefully helps you. Syndergaard's a little bit tougher to figure out. I mean, neither of them are easy to figure out, but Syndergaard, like, you look at his last 7 starts, okay?
Yes.
10.6 hits per 9 innings during that stretch. But also, no, I'm sorry, I got the stats backwards here. Let me start over.
Okay.
He hasn't exceeded 6 innings in his last 7 starts, so that's a problem right there, right?
That
11.1 hits per 9 innings, but still 10.6 strikeouts per 9 innings. You know what? I took terrible notes here. It's either one or the other.
What is the BABIP, though, for Syndergaard?
The BABIP is...
I feel like he's getting singled to death.
Near 400. It is. So that's what makes it hard to figure out. I mean, he's still missing a lot of bats, but he's giving up a lot more hits, and he's not going deep into games. These are all playing into each other. Is it a bad luck situation, as the BABIP would suggest, or is it a case of him... that elbow injury he's dealing with affecting his command just enough that he's getting hit harder. I think in a small sample, I don't think you can just blame BABIP luck necessarily. And the fact that he also has a higher walk rate during this stretch would seem to give credence to that idea. So I'm not sure we are going to see April, May, June version of Syndergaard rest of season. I'm not saying we won't. I'm just not confident we will. So must start, I think so, but my expectations are reduced.
Well, he's got a second start, Syndergaard, this weekend at San Francisco. He'll start him. Keuchel at Baltimore this weekend. Start or sit? If you were just in a daily league, start or sit at Baltimore?
Oh, I'd sit with that matchup.
Keuchel?
Coming off the start he just had, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Al had mentioned, though, Baltimore. Remember Al?
I do remember Al.
Yeah. It's weird to go to the rankings page now, by the way, and see only two columns of rankings.
Yeah,
very strange.
This headshot's still in the middle for some reason.
It is?
Yeah.
No, not on the league pages.
Okay. Yeah, I usually go to the fantasy news page. There are two different rankings pages, so I'm glad they got that other one cleaned up.
Baltimore, you'd said, had really not been hitting all that well, and it's true, looking at it now. And, well, whatever. Still a little risky with Keuchel. All right. Thursday standouts. We're getting a little bit deeper into, Tuesday standouts. Getting deeper into Tuesday's action. Irvin Santana is 80% owned. He was the original since my birthday guy, because his hot streak started on my birthday on June 19th. Since that day, that's 9-10 starts now for Irvin Santana. He is the number 8 starting pitcher in points leagues, number 9 in Roto, a sub-1 whip, a 1.84 ERA, a 5-2 record, but very few strikeouts, 50 strikeouts and 68 in the third. What do you project in the future for Santana, who threw 7 excellent innings at Atlanta last night?
I project that at some point this will end, and he will have another rough stretch. Seems to be a very streaky pitcher. That ERA tends to the overall ERA tends to normalize around 4 over time. And I would expect that same pattern to hold, but I don't mind using him as a hot hand play in the meantime. I just don't think, you know, he's the answer to your hopes and prayers necessarily.
Is there any matchup that Irvin Santana could have that you would sit him in? Because in this stretch, he pitched really well against Detroit. He struggled a bit against Cleveland. It's been pretty good competition for him during this stretch. I don't remember all 10 starts off the top of my head, but I'm trying to look at their schedule. His next start would be at Kansas City. That's not a problem. But then 2 starts from now, you're looking at Toronto for Irvin Santana. Do you feel good enough about him right now? If you were facing Toronto in his next start, would you start him at the Rogers Center?
Maybe not in a 1-star week. And it depends how, what did you say? There was 1 or 2 starts in between.
1 in between. He's going to do great. Yeah. It's at Kansas City.
Well, not necessarily. Yeah,
he'll do great.
If that start is a good start, it would be a 50-50 situation for me. Depends what the other options I had were. Unless it's part of a 2-star week. I'm not sure what day of the week that lines up on.
Yeah, I don't know that there's much to react to here. It might be a let's see where this goes kind of deal, but Andrew McCutchen, in August, he's batting .297 with a .469 on base percentage. He has 12 walks to 8 strikeouts. You'd like to see more power, only 2 extra base hits this month, but 3 steals and 4 attempts. He was thrown out stealing last night. So things are looking a little bit better for McCutchen. And, you know, Scott, it coincides with when he got benched for 3 games at Atlanta to start the month. And since then, he's come back maybe with a new approach. Maybe it's just a small sample size, but good stuff right now for McCutchen.
And, well, have you seen what Bryce Harper's been doing since he sat out almost a full week there?
What, the last 3 games?
Yeah, it's been, you know, 4-for-9 with 3 doubles and 4 walks. So
yeah, I, you know, I'm we're talking about it a little bit though.
Okay,
because he's been at Coors Field for 2 games, and on Sunday, I don't remember who they faced, but they absolutely pummeled the opponent, whoever it was.
Well, the fact that it's only 3 games is reason enough to poo-poo it. I'm just pointing out it's been nice to see. It's been a little bit of a relief there.
Especially if you started those guys kind of reluctantly. You're feeling good about it right now. So there's actually some must-see baseball in the Bronx right now. I want to see Gary Sanchez. I want to see Tyler Austin. I want to see Aaron Judge. I want to see Alex... never mind. But I do want to go to a game. This morning, I went to my phone. I opened up my SeatGeek app. I started looking for tickets. I typed in the Yankees, just Yankees. Looking at tickets for next month, $14 for Yankees-Blue Jays tickets. That could be a really big game, hopefully. You click on the event, you see all of the available tickets. SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites and finds seats for you. It does all the internet scouring. It does all the hard work for you, lists all the available seats, and SeatGeek ranks those seats based on value, so you immediately see your best value. It makes it really simple. That's why I love the SeatGeek app and why you should be using it on the app or on the website. And you can see the view from your seat, which is awesome. You know exactly what you're getting when you buy your tickets. It's the best way to buy tickets. It's the only way I buy tickets. SeatGeek.com or the SeatGeek app. And we can save you money too, because our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, and our promo code is FANTASY, F-A-N-T-A-S-Y, FANTASY, all caps. SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, enter the promo code FANTASY on the SeatGeek app. So the multi-homer club yesterday included two catchers, a washed-up second baseman, and potentially the number one pick in next year's fantasy drafts. Let's start with the catchers. 54% Gary Sanchez, 54% owned. Two home runs to give him four on the year. 340 batting average, but only two walks, 11 strikeouts right now for Sanchez. And then Russell Martin, who is the number 10 catcher in fantasy this year after the worst April of all time. Batted 150 with one extra base hit, four walks and 31 strikeouts in April. Martin's been actually pretty bad since then, but for a catcher, he's been fine. Anyway, Sanchez and Martin both homered. Scott, who would you rather own?
They both homered twice, right?
Yes.
I would rather own Sanchez. I'm still stunned he's only 54% owned. I mean, he's playing more regularly than most catchers. He's obviously producing. He was doing well even before this two-homer game. Maybe this is the headliner performance that causes fantasy owners to act finally. Although I do think it's interesting, Martin, you know, this is kind of just kind of an aberration for Martin, I feel like. I'm not as impressed by what he's been doing lately, but I feel like there has been a minor resurgence at the catcher position recently where, you know, for all its lack of depth, you don't really need depth at catcher. You just need as many options as there are catcher spots to fill in your league, because everybody's only going to have just the minimum. Nobody wants a catcher utility, right?
Right.
So there only needs to be 12 in a standard one catcher league. And I think with Sanchez, with Mike Zunino, with
Contreras has helped.
Sure, Wilson Contreras has helped. Cameron Rupp also homered on Tuesday, and I mean, you'd be surprised where he shows up in the year to date rankings. He actually has the second best average exit velocity of any hitter, ahead of even Giancarlo Stanton.
Don't forget the king of BABIP, Sandy Leon, Scott.
I'm not going to even mention him because there's no need to go that far down the list. I'm even forgetting some. Oh, Yasmani
Grandal.
So,
that's what I was going to say. I mean, would you
obviously
rather have
his
Sanchez,
ownership percentage is way up.
Would you rather have Sanchez or Grandal?
I would rather have Sanchez than Grandal.
No,
I
think there's more, really?
I think there's more legs to this. I think, you know,
what?
Yasmani Grandal has shown enough downside over the course of his career that I think a lot of this is just a matter of him being on the right side of streaky right
no,
now.
No, look, let me
Which
let
isn't
me talk
to say
you,
he's not one of the top 12.
Let
I
me
mean,
talk you
still,
into him, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Last year, you had Yasmani Grandal as a sleeper or a breakout.
Yeah.
And you were right, because you look at the overall numbers, and they're not so great from 2015. But let me just do one quick little baseball reference search here. Okay, going into the final month of the season, Grandal had a .263 batting average with 15 home runs in 98 games. He had an .823 OPS. He had a really good year, and then he got hurt, and he played the month of September hurt, and he had a Russell Martin April in September. He batted, 0.59. I've never seen anything unbelievable. He batted 3.451 in September. So, and it actually went back even further than that. Let's see. He was like 3.4. Okay. This is amazing. Yasmani Grandal was 4 for his last 82 last year. Before that, he had an 889 OPS. So I think he really did do what you were expecting him to do last year, and I think he's doing it right now. He'll cool off, but I also think Gary Sanchez will cool off. Pitchers are going to make adjustments. It happens all the time.
Well, he'll, you know, it's easy to say Gary Sanchez will cool off when he's hitting
340.
What is it? 340?
340, yeah.
340? I mean, but prior to yesterday's game, he was batting 300, and I still thought he was doing... I still thought he was probably going to be more valuable than Grandal in the long run. It's not just... When I say Grandal is going to cool off, I mean the pace he's been on the last 6 weeks is just ridiculous. I do think he'll cool off and be about an 800 OPS guy. He'll be good. He'll be top 12. But he'll also sit every fourth or fifth game. Sanchez, between catcher and DH, is playing just about every single day. The Yankees caused that whole drama with A-Rod just to make sure that Sanchez could play every day. And I think that's going to continue. And maybe the percentages for him and Grandal will be very close. But just in terms of playing time, I think Sanchez beats him out.
But that you'll be right about for sure. I also want to say that for everybody up in the Northeast knows it, and it's not just the Northeast. It is so hot lately, and the Yankees and all their opponents are hitting a ton of home runs. I mean, just look at yesterday. You had two catchers combined for 4 home runs. You saw Tyler Austin, Aaron Judge. They've had success lately. Logan Forsythe, Evan Longoria. So the ball is flying right now. It is a great time to be a hitter in a lot of these ballparks around the country. It's just the weather is great for home runs right now. And, you know, this crazy heat wave that hopefully is ending soon. It's oppressive out there, Scott. Oppressive heat.
Oppressive heat. We're not even down in Rio de Janeiro. We're oppressed by the heat.
Yeah. I wish I were in South Florida right now. That's saying something.
Yeah.
Okay. We got a lot more to get to here, but here's an email from Vincent Kong from Toronto, Canada. He says, thinking ahead to next year, I'm not hearing much talk about Jose Altuve, number one overall, but I think he deserves it. Why wouldn't we take Altuve, number one?
Why wouldn't we take Altuve, number one? Okay, I'm actually writing a piece about this, hopefully one that I get on the site today. Who's number one next year? I have Trout. I would probably take Betts over Altuve as well. And the issue isn't because, you know, I have any a real problem with Altuve. I mean, we're picking between amazing players, so you have to be extra nitpicky just to distinguish between them. Altuve's best categories are batting average and stolen bases, right? Mm-hmm. Those are also the two categories that I think are the least trustworthy from year to year. You know, just in terms, like, I have kind of a general rule for any hitter. The upside and down, like he could hit within his 30 points of his career batting average, either one direction or another, any given year.
But he's always going to have a great batting average unless he has a really bad year.
Right. But right now we're assessing him on a 365 batting average.
Well, like, even if he hits 330, he still is in the conversation as the number one player in fantasy.
He's still in the conversation, but He's not going any lower than fourth next year. Like I said, you have to be extra nitpicky to distinguish between these guys. And then in terms of stolen bases, that is such a decision-based stat. And the fact that Altuve has emerged as more of a middle-of-the-order hitter this year as opposed to a table setter, it might cause the Astros to shy away from sending him on the bases. We've actually kind of see it play out over the course of this season. Mm-hmm. 9 stolen bases in April, 4 in May and June. I mean, sorry, 9 in April, 6 in May and June, 4 in July, and only 1 so far in August. So they've started the tail off just over the course of this season. If he's only a 30 steal guy instead of, you know, 40 or 50, that's going to knock him back a little too. So I just see a little more room for him to step back a little than I do for Trout or even Betts. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wouldn't take him number one next year. And I actually think second base is the deeper position probably than outfield.
That's a great point. That's what I was going to say. I might it might come down to on draft day after we've done all the research and this year's over and we've made your, you've made your tiers and your rankings. And we, right now you think second base is pretty deep. Maybe you will feel differently next year. Who knows? But it might just come down to position scarcity and also what you can get at outfield at the end of the second round and the beginning of the third round. And maybe if you feel like, cause I'm actually kind of going through this right now with football, with wide receiver and running back, the wide receivers that are available at the swing at the end of the second round and the beginning of the third round are much more exciting to me than the running backs. Now you might get Eddie Lacy. You might get Mark Ingram, but you also have, I don't know, six wide receivers that could be on the board that you're feeling pretty good about. But I'm still taking Antonio Brown number one overall because I just want the best player. So, you know what I'm saying, Scott? Like, you could be sitting there this time last year. I guess you weren't really getting bets, but you could have gotten who? Gosh, which outfielders were going in that range?
Not very good ones.
Actually.
Early in the first round?
No, in the set 2-3 swing.
2-3 swing. No, Betts was part of that. Betts was going mid to late second round. George Springer was as well.
Yeah, you could have gotten Springer. I don't know. In our leagues, you couldn't have gotten Betts. He became pretty trendy by the time all the drafts came around, and he ended up being like a mid-second round pick. But it's something to consider. What can I get at outfield at rounds 2 and 3? And should that mean I take Altuve in round 1 instead of Betts or Trout?
Yeah.
Donaldson is in the mix too. By the way, I left off two players from the multi-home run club. Chase Utley homered twice. It doesn't really matter to you, right?
No, okay. He doesn't.
And Betts homered twice. And Betts has 28 home runs this year. He's hit 7 of them at Camden Yards. Crazy.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
And he's hit a lot at home. You know, in my research for this, one thing I discovered about Betts is among the hitters with, you know, these stats are a day old, of course, and he's kind of changed the picture with two more home runs. But among hitters with at least 13 home runs, his average distance on his home runs was like the 4th or 5th lowest. So, you know, that would normally raise alarm in a hitter. But, I mean, Fenway Park, short home runs from a right-handed hitter, that's right. Kind of what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, and he's an extreme pull hitter, isn't he?
At least in terms of the home runs he hits, yes.
The home runs. Yeah, right. The home runs.
Yes. So, you know, I don't even really consider that a red flag. And this is kind of why I think part of the reason why I think he's safer than Altuve next year. Like he and Trout both contribute in so many different ways that if they have an off year in any of those one areas, they're still going to be, you know, monster top 5 hitters, probably. We've seen that this year from Trout. You know, the home run pace, he might not even reach 30 this year after hitting 41 last year, but the steals have come back for him, so it hasn't really mattered. And I think Betts is kind of the same player. If he falls short on home runs next year, doesn't hit the 35, ends up with only 25, that just means that a lot of those home runs are banging off the top of the Green Monster and are becoming doubles instead. So it's not a real problem.
Absolutely. Now, the tweet of the day is from Al, not Melchior, Al Ralston. By the way, Al's Twitter handle changed. I think it's Al Melk BB now, not Al Melk CBS, if you still want to follow him. Al says, I sure hope you guys can get into Corey Kluber on the podcast today. Scott,
okay.
Can we get into him?
What do we want to get into him about?
There's not much to say. He's been very consistent, and you know, which is great. He's not having these horrible blow-ups. Yesterday, gave up a lot of hits, if I recall. I didn't even put him in the notes, but
neither did I. I didn't take note on it because it was just another solid Corey Kluber start. I mean, I think we've brought up before that he's probably our favorite to win the AL Cy Young. Not, which doesn't mean if the season ended today, he would deserve to be the AL Cy Young. It would probably be Aaron Sanchez, but just, you know, the concerns about Sanchez's innings and the kind of trend Kluber's on right now. I think I speaking for myself anyway, I'm expecting him to lead to a Cy Young win for him.
Well, I think what was interesting about last night's start, I'm just trying to find something to say about him. We know that Kluber's had trouble pitching with men on base. Yesterday, he put a lot of guys on base, and he pitched really well. 6 innings, 7 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. And then The bigger development in that game, Andrew Miller pitched the 7th and the 8th innings, and Cody Allen got the save. And Miller
again
pitched 2 innings on 16 pitches. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
only one
efficiency.
K.
Just let him pitch all the final 3. Why not?
That right?
Three-inning save and the more traditional save rule.
It's obvious right now that Cody Allen's going to get a lot of the save chances, if not all.
It seems like it. I'm still not ruling out them making a switch here at the first blown save. I mean, I would expect Allen to blow a save at some point over the next 6 weeks, and I think that could change the picture, depending on how much attention the blown save gets, maybe.
I'm going to catch you up on everything going on around baseball right now. Jonathan Papelbon could have a new team by the end of the day. Scott, do you think he could become a closer somewhere? Papelbon.
No, I don't.
James Paxton is on the DL. Nate Eovaldi has a terrible elbow injury. He has a torn flexor tendon and a partially torn UCL. He needs 2 elbow surgeries, and quite frankly, Eovaldi's career may be in jeopardy. Now, Luis Sessa will join the Yankees rotation. This was the most interesting thing I heard yesterday. It was on the Yankees broadcast. It was their announcer, their play-by-play guy, Michael Kay, talking about how he spoke with some Toronto people. He didn't really specify what that meant. but people, I think people who cover the team, I don't want to speak for him, but the bottom line is people who would know think that the 6-man rotation is hurting the Blue Jays pitchers. And Estrada, they speculate, might be the one being hurt the most by it. And he was bad yesterday, gave up 3 home runs, because he relies so much on his changeup and it's a feel pitch. So there's a theory now going around with these Blue Jays pitchers, Scott, particularly Marco Estrada, that the 6-man rotation is hurting them.
Hmm. There may be something to that.
Yeah.
Now, I think they went to the 6-man rotation with the Liriano acquisition at the trade deadline, right? So it wasn't any earlier than that, was it?
No, I don't think so.
So it's only been 3 starts for Estrada. The first one was very good, but, you know, maybe the rest hadn't been built into that yet. The last 2 have been bad in different ways, but both were bad. But he wasn't on, and I know he had like a DL stint during there, so maybe it's unfair to group all the starts together, but he wasn't on the greatest run even before they extended the rotation to 6 men. He now has a 4.21 ERA over his last 10 starts, and it was 4.10 in the 7 before this one. So, you know, a lot of quality starts, 3 earned runs, 6 innings, not getting rocked, but just not as dominant as he looked at the start of the season.
Sure. Yep.
Which is also weird because the strikeout rate has been better during this stretch.
John Lackey may not make his next start this week. Trevor Cahill could replace him in the Cubs rotation. Stephen Wright should be back in a week. Chris Tillman being moved back to Saturday due to shoulder discomfort. We'll see if he makes that start. Dylan Bundy's going to pitch today. Tyson Ross through BP. He's hoping to come back late in the year. Alex Cobb could be back by the end of the month. Interesting story on Coco Crisp. He has a $13 million option, Coco Crisp, for next season. And it vests if he plays 130 games, and the A's have been sitting Crisp lately because they don't want to pay $13 million to Coco Crisp next year, and Crisp is not happy. You can read about it on CBSSports.com. Miguel Cabrera sat with the biceps injury. He is day-to-day, and Julio Teheran is expected to come off the DL Friday. A couple of lineup, or 3 lineup notes. Tyler Austin sat again with Mark Teixeira in the lineup, and Jurickson Profar led off for the Rangers, as we were hoping. Shinsu Chu's on the DL. Nomar Mazara sat this time against a righty with Ryan Rua, who they just called up in the lineup. Oh, Mazara. How owned do you think Mazara is? What do you think his ownership percentage is?
78, I will say.
Ooh.
Which would be higher than it probably should be.
I'm going to say it's in the 80s still. Da-da-da-da. The answer is 82%. Good for us. I was a little more. I gave myself a bigger range there than Scott did, but he doesn't need to be 82% owned, Nomar Mazara. And David Dahl sat against a lefty. He did have a pinch hit double, and he's actually 8-for-19 against lefties, but only 1 extra base hit, no walks, 4 strikeouts for David Dahl. So maybe a little lucky against lefties so far. But Scott, we really haven't seen that many games with Dahl, Carlos Gonzalez, and Charlie Blackmon healthy, because Cargo's been a little banged up, in which they face a lefty. I don't know that we know what the Rockies are going to do in that situation. Or is it just sit down?
No. Well, no, I don't think it'll be... I don't think they'll do the same thing every time. I think there's incentive to get Ryan Rayburn in the lineup against a lefty, because historically he's been so good against them. But the last time they faced a lefty, they did that at first base, where, of course, they have an opening with the Mark Reynolds injury. And I would suspect that happens more often. You know, maybe Gonzalez sits against the next lefty. I don't think it's going... I don't see it as a long-term issue for Dahl.
So yesterday I thought we were going to have some really good starts from Syndergaard and Keuchel. We didn't really get it. We got it from Duffy. We got it from, well, pretty good from Verlander. 3 earned runs in 7 innings wasn't a great start. But the bottom line is, if you were burned by Noah Syndergaard, if you were burned by Dallas Keuchel yesterday, hey, today's a new day on FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com is the best place to play your daily fantasy sports. It's the only site I use for daily fantasy. I can't wait to start playing football on FanDuel.com. They have a new and improved site, a new and improved product. They have a lot of great additions and great upgrades that they've made. You have to go to FanDuel.com to find out about it. But one thing you can do now is friends mode, where you can compete against a friend throughout the season in football and play basically like seasonal fantasy, but with a new lineup every single week, a new team every single week in the typical FanDuel process there. So here's what you do. You go now, start playing some fantasy baseball because your teams are struggling. You need a new squad. Do it on FanDuel.com. Set a lineup every day. Stay under the salary cap. Win some money. And if you're a new user, enter our promo code HOMERUN. No spaces, one word, HOMERUN, when you sign up on FanDuel.com. Enter your first league. Either win a cash prize in that league or get a refund on your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. FanDuel.com, promo code is HOMERUN. Let's look at the bullpen now. Mentioned Cody Allen getting the save. Brandon Kinstler is 38% owned, Scott. He's having a good year. Doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but doesn't walk anyone. And with the Twins being, you know, okay now, how about Kinstler, 5 saves in July, 4 so far in August, maybe a little under-owned at 38%?
Yes, I would say so. I prefer him to anybody the Braves are throwing out there. I know Arodis Vizcaino's coming back soon, but I'd rather have Kinstler than him. I'd rather have him than Brandon Mauer.
You would, huh? Yeah, that
yeah,
makes sense.
I
that
would.
Makes sense.
I'll rat Ryan Madsen. I'll take Kinstler instead. So we're still talking about a bottom tier closer, but not the very bottom.
Bottom tier would be Fernando Salas, the very bottom. He got a save yesterday for the Angels. Well, you know, when you're trying to figure out who's replacing Houston Street, it would be nice if the Angels wouldn't go on an 11-game losing streak. But they did, and it's over, and Salas got the save yesterday, and he's 6% owned. Santiago Casilla pitched the 9th, trailing by 1 run. I don't know what that was all about. He's now pitched 3 times in the last 4 games. 4 days, too. That was weird. And Sam Dyson gave up 3 hits and a run. He blew his 4th save. You think there might be a change in Texas?
I wouldn't rule it out, but my guess is no. It wasn't a bad enough blown save. And Jeremy Jeffress hasn't been lights out since coming over.
Matt Bush.
Yeah, he hasn't been lights out since they made the trade to get Jeffress. So I don't think there's enough incentive for them to change from Dyson, really.
Anything else that we need to cover here? I do have some more stuff to go over, trying to prioritize it. This always happens. I put way too much stuff in the notes, and then I try to pick and choose the best things, like these following players who homered yesterday and have been homering a lot lately in some cases. Yasmani Tomas, 2 straight games in which he's gone 1 for 5 with a home run. Hernan Perez, still keeping it up, Scott, with the bat, not just the steals. He had a home run and a steal yesterday, Hernan Perez. Jed Jerko, 3 home runs in his last 4 games. He was ice cold before this and has only 1 multi-hit game since July 23rd. That's Jed Jerko. And Alex Bregman, welcome to the club. He had his 1st home run. Anything stand out there? You know, Bregman and Hernan Perez are owned in the same amount of leagues, 69%.
Hmm. I still like Bregman more. It was an opposite field shot, by the way. Not a particularly long one, but, you know, if you buy the premise that, if you agree with the premise that every opposite field home run is impressive, then it was impressive. So
is that a premise? People think that?
I think that. Do you not think that?
I think that, like, the opposite field home run that Tyler Austin hit was not that impressive.
That was probably the least impressive opposite field home run.
But the same thing in Houston Stadium, too. That's not the most impressive poke, that opposite field shot for a righty.
I don't know. I think if it was a left-handed hitter hitting an opposite field shot to left in Houston, that would be a different situation. It was just a wall scraper, but I don't know. This one was fine for Bregman.
Okay, I didn't see it.
I think he is a little deserves to be more owned than Perez.
Me too. I like
Perez very much in Roto for the steals, but in points leagues, there's no reason to really bother with him.
Yeah, look, Bregman hasn't been great lately, but he's been better. Mm-hmm. He's showing signs. He seems to be getting on base. He's batting second in that Astros order.
Between Springer and Altuve.
Yeah. And Springer needs to start hitting again, by the way. That'd be nice. Danny Duffy had another great start. Jason Hamill had another great start. I know people were worried about Hamill doing his second half thing, and it is not happening. In fact, he is throwing a lot of pitches. He's going deeper into games right now. He's got a 0.95 ERA since the All-Star break. This is exciting stuff with Jason Hamill, Scott.
Yeah, this is what I was thinking this morning, because Jason Hamill, his overall ERA is down to 2.75. Who do the Cubs sit when they get to the playoffs? Which pitcher doesn't get to start games for them?
Lackey?
No way.
So what are the options here? Arrieta, Lester, Hamill. Who am I missing in the rotation?
Kendrick. Hendricks. Yeah, Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, it's Lackey.
No.
Who is it? Is Hamill?
I guess I hadn't even considered Lackey. I mean, has such a track record and is such an innings eater. But I guess it's possible. I would get my thinking just on the way Joe Maddon handles him, it would be Kyle Hendricks.
Could be.
Even though he's like a dark horse Cy Young candidate, you know?
They have to make the playoffs first before we have this conversation, Scott.
Oh, come on.
Let's read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Of course I didn't, all right. Full disclosure.
You didn't find any emails?
No, we have emails.
Nobody's emailing us?
I was really late to the party today, so I didn't put them in the notes, so now I'm going into my inbox.
Did anybody email you about your, awful Olympics take yesterday, not liking track and field?
Oh, did I say I didn't like track and field? I said I liked swimming better, that I was into the swimming and I'm not into the track. I watched the hurdles last night.
I mean, Michael Phelps kind of made swimming more of a primetime thing, I think, but track and field is still a top draw. I mean,
let me tell
Jenny
you
Simpson, come on, my wife's successor there. Nice, bronze
that?
Medal. That was nice to see.
Oh, yeah, great. I didn't know. Let me tell you the big difference. All right. This is why I like swimming better. The track and field announcer, the color broadcaster, he's good. He's very interesting. He knows a lot of stuff. The color broadcaster for the swimming, Roddy whatever, is like the most exciting man in the world. As soon as they hit the wall and go for their last stretch of 50 meters, he starts freaking out, and it is so fun. He's like, oh, Michael Phelps with the turn. That was such an amazing turn. He's going to have a shot. And I get so into it. So that
you sound like a big fan, Rodney something. Yeah. Big fan, Adam Azer.
I think I know his name. I'm going to Google it to make sure. It's Rowdy Gaines. I don't know. Whatever his name is. I think
whatever.
It's Roddy Gaines.
You see his name in front of you and you don't even know what it is.
And I think it's Rowdy. That's his nickname. Yeah, well, that makes sense. Because it gets really rowdy. So he's awesome. And swimming gets... And then the crowd gets really into it because it's not like a big outdoor stadium. It's this indoor thing that everybody's freaking out. It's a much more exciting finish. The track races are over in 10 seconds, some of them.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of different track events, you know. They're running
true.
All kinds of different distances. Jenny Simpson.
Oh, you know, I think USA Basketball is starting in like 5 minutes, so we need to watch that, Scott. Now, here's the grade, the trade. It is from Chad. My Rougned Odor for his Gene Segura and Anthony Rendon in a keeper league. Odor, giving him up, getting Segura and Rendon.
I think I'd do that. Yeah. I mean, the only hesitation is Odor seems like the best keeper of the three, but not by such a wide margin that I think I'd turn down the help now, because I mean, those guys are fine keepers too.
This is from Missing Al in Massachusetts. Greg here is Missing Al. His name is Greg. Drop Tyler Austin for Justin Morneau in a utility spot.
Shish. I don't think either's going to make a big difference for you. I do think Morneau probably gets a little more playing time, so I'll say yes.
Addison from Atlanta says, hello, not Al, not Al, and not Al. I'm in a 5x5 categories keeper league. A few weeks ago, I picked up AJ Pollock. I can keep him for a 13th round pick. So should I, let's see, I guess he has to choose between Pollock in the 13th round. Would you keep him over Correa in the 13th round or Machado in the 9th round?
No.
Now he's last on the list for you?
I mean, he's coming off a pretty serious injury here. I guess it's possible that he comes back the last few weeks of September and
dominates. We'll revisit.
But I mean, you're talking about two. I mean, Machado's a first rounder next year, and Correa is not going to be far off. So, 9th and 13th round for them is insane value.
Omar in Buffalo clinched a playoff spot. He's off until late August. He wants to know some guys who you could stash now that might pay off in September. He's stashing Alex Reyes. I don't know that that's a great idea, Omar. I don't think Reyes is going to join that Cardinals rotation. Is there anyone you can think of, Scott, that's a good stash for somebody who's already made the playoffs?
Pollock. Yeah. He's so widely owned now. That might be, and I know this is just top of mind, but that might be a scenario to stash Swanson and see if he does have this storybook breakout, because I do think it's possible, and you obviously don't need him right now. Alex Cobb, he returns from Tommy John. Did you just say him?
No, I didn't, but it's a good call.
On
a lower end, Tyson Ross, just I don't know when he's going to be back.
Yeah. Andrew Miller, if somebody dropped him, and the thinking being he does take over his closer at some point, that's another possibility.
Okay. John wants to know who you'd rather have rest of season, Christian Yelich or Gregory Polanco?
I would rather have Yelich. Pretty close, though.
Yelich. And Kyle wants to know, he says, hey, rock, paper, and scissors. Do you have a default that you go to if you play rock, paper, scissors?
Well, should I tell you? Are we ever going to play rock, paper, scissors?
We can play right
now
on Skype if you'd like.
All right. Let's do it.
Let's give this a shot. So it's going to be rock, paper, scissor, and then shoot, and then you lay. Okay.
All right. I got it.
All right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh, he got me with the scissors.
Ha ha.
Got me with the scissors.
So your go-to is paper then, huh?
Paper, yeah. I think paper is my go-to.
My go-to has changed over the course of my life, I feel like. Like, as a kid, I always went rock because I just felt, logically speaking, rock's the strongest,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then I went paper because I started to think, okay, everybody's picking rock first. Let's go paper. And then I switched to scissors because it seemed like nobody ever picked scissors, so I'll go scissors. But now, like, I don't think there's any logic behind that. It's just the way my little deviant mind worked.
Well, you win. Congratulations. We'll end on this. Kyle in DC, he's a lock for the playoffs. 5x5, 10 team weekly roster lock. I was offered Clayton Kershaw for my Corey Kluber and Santiago Casilla. Would you give up Kluber and Casilla for Kershaw?
Is this a keeper league?
It is not.
It's not? No, I wouldn't. Stick with Kluber. He's good enough. Not knowing how Kershaw's season's going to go.
That is Scott White. I am Adam Azer. Thank you guys for listening. We're back tomorrow with another edition of Fantasy Baseball Today. Until then, see you later. USA! Machado or